This is Corolla Digital.
This is We the People.
What is wrong with our country?
I don't want to believe what you believe and you can't make.
I want to hear why it's bad to feel good.
These two political gangs don't have your best interest in mind.
Makes me proud to be an American. Makes me even smarter to be off the grid.
Stay vigilant, people.
Abraham, light up that joint.
Welcome to the fourth edition of We the People with Jesse Ventura. I'm your host, Jesse Ventura, also known as Jesse the Body Ventura, and Jesse the Mind Ventura, and Governor Jesse Ventura, and soon maybe just plain Jesse Ventura. Today's a big episode. I've got Roddy Piper here for you. That's right, Rowdy Roddy Piper's getting in the ring with me today. And we're going to talk about our wrestling days and hopefully much, much more, because both of us have probably lost most of our memories by this point in time. But first, let's go to my vigilant producer, Alex Logan, with the latest headlines. Alex, what do you got out there with headlines? Not good, I bet, huh?
Not really. Welcome back, Governor. Welcome back, listeners. First up today, we couldn't start the podcast without addressing the latest out of Missouri. President Obama called for a calm in response to the unrest coming out of St. Louis, Missouri, after the shooting death of Michael Brown, an unarmed black teenager. Obama sent Attorney General Eric Holder to the St. Louis suburb of Ferguson, as well as Ronald Davis, the director of the Justice Department's Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services. Both arrived on Tuesday to work with police officials. Obama expressed an interest in making sure that if, in fact, the National Guard is used, it is used in a limited and appropriate way to put an end to the unrest in the area. Missouri Governor Jay Nixon stated that the National Guard would be limited to protecting the police command center there, which came under attack over the weekend, according to the authorities. Governor, what's your general take over the whole situation? Will Eric Holder do any good in Missouri?
Well, you know, if Missouri continues to face the unrest, they're certainly going to bring out the National Guard and they're going to quell it. They're going to put it down. Rest assured of that. And that's what we need to understand, that's the alternative today, I think, is that they'll allow us to protest to a certain level, but at a certain level, they're going to shut it down. I mean, we should see the writing on the wall with the Wall Street protesters. You know, you had the Wall Street protesters simply occupying parks and that and those things, and ultimately they let them protest for a while, but when they grew tired of it and it grew stale to them, they brought in the tear gas and the dogs and they ran everybody off. So they allow you to protest to a certain level, but once you cross their line, then they're going to disperse you with all available resources, I think. So, you know, they're going to come in and Eric Holder and they're all going to talk and all that, and hopefully it'll do some good. But I don't know if they can work miracles, because to me, this shows that we still have a major racism problem in our country. And, you know, we may be giving it only lip service, but it's still truly under the surface it exists, and it's obviously still there.
Well, what do you make of Obama's statements? He did criticize the local police, saying there's no excuse for excessive force by police or any action that denies people the right to protest peacefully.
Well, again, he better be saying that, because we have the First Amendment out there, and as long as people do protest peacefully, government is not supposed to interfere in any way, shape, or form. And it just seems to me today we always have too much government interference. They'll allow the protests for a while, but then at some point they pull the plug on it. And, you know, they don't have the right to do that as long as the protests remain peaceful. But let's remember this, too. There's also underlying operatives out there. Call me a skeptic, but you're going to get people working to try to make sure violence does happen so the lockdown can take place. Don't think for one instance that peace groups aren't infiltrated, because they were back in the 60s. You had government operatives out there causing disruption on purpose so that they could lock down the protesters and stop the protests. So you all call me paranoid, but you've also got to be wary of that also.
Well, of course, it's been reported by the big media that the slain teen had marijuana in his system after an autopsy was conducted by the coroner's office. Governor, is it really a matter of importance if Brown had marijuana in his system or not?
Absolutely not, because you can test positive for marijuana 2 to 3 weeks after using it. Just because someone tests positive for marijuana does not mean they are under the influence of it. If you smoke marijuana Friday night, you will test positive Monday morning. And you're certainly not under the influence by Monday morning. And you know what? They're going to use marijuana? You got to be kidding me. People do not commit acts of violence on marijuana. Not very often. Marijuana is not a violent drug. And if they're going to try to use marijuana as the catalyst that caused all this, I can see that being done because, you know, marijuana is now legal in Washington and Colorado. And there are certain elements of our country called the drug prescription area who do not want marijuana legalized in any way, shape or form. So it doesn't surprise me that they would try to say that this young man was under the influence of marijuana, and so marijuana's the culprit. Stop using drugs as an excuse, people. If somebody breaks the law, I don't care if they're on drugs or not. I care that they broke the law.
Well, protesters in response asked that the officer who shot Brown also be tested. Thoughts, Governor?
Yeah, absolutely. If you're going to test the kid that got killed, you should also drug test the officer that killed him. To sit and state marijuana, like I said, you can test positive for marijuana 3 weeks after using it. It doesn't mean you're under the influence of it at the time of the action.
Well, moving right along, no arrest warrant was issued for Texas Governor Rick Perry after a grand jury indicted him on 2 felony charges of coercion and abuse of official capacity. The governor can continue to travel the country and gear up for a possible 2016 presidential run. The indictment stems from the drunk driving arrest last year of Travis County District Attorney Rosemary Limburg, who was captured on video berating officers after her arrest. She served jail time, underwent counseling, and returned to her post. But Governor Perry called for her resignation, and when she refused, he vetoed $7.5 million in state funding for the public integrity unit that she oversees. The withholding forced Limburg to cut some staff in that office. So, Governor, are you Team Perry or Team Limburg here?
Well, you know, again, I guess that's Texas politics going on down there. I don't like Rick Perry. When I went down there and campaigned for Kinky Friedman back down there many years ago as the independent in Texas, Rick Perry, you know, he likes to portray himself as this upstanding guy, and yet he drudged up the 1998 Playboy article I did. So obviously Governor Perry keeps Playboy when they're 10 years old and must collect them. Because he pulled out this 10-year-old quote of me that he used on me down there, and I found it pretty humorous, realizing, of course, that Governor Perry only reads the articles in Playboy. He don't look at the pictures, even though he keeps them for over 10 years so that he can reference them as time goes on. But no, I'm no Rick Perry fan. I think he's a phony. You know, he's a typical Republican. And, you know, if he committed a crime, then he ought to be indicted for it. And, you know, it seems that that's Texas politics. You know, a lot worse goes on than that in Texas. You know, I will say this. I have no love for Rick Perry, Governor Perry. I don't care for him at all.
Perry himself spoke to Fox News on the issue, saying, "I stood up for the rule of law in the state of Texas. And if I had to do it again, I would make exactly the same decision."
Well, you know, good. At least he's comfortable with his decision of withholding that money for a personal political vendetta. You know, I guess, see, what you're seeing there is simply politics as usual by Democrats and Republicans. That's how they operate. They hold grudges. They withhold money. The people don't even enter in. Here's a classic example of Rick Perry going after District Attorney Rosemary Limburg for political reasons, and who ultimately suffers for it? The people do. See, that's how Democrats and Republicans operate. They don't give a damn about you. They care about their own political infighting, and you just happen to be pawns in the game. Alex, does that sound logical?
It sounds logical the way you put it. But there's also a lot being made over Rick Perry now wearing glasses. During his 2012 presidential run, he didn't have any, but now he does. So does wearing glasses make you more presidential, Governor?
Gol, I got glasses on. Does that mean I got to take them off?
If you don't want to run for president.
Usually it's because you got bad eyes. I'll give Rick Perry the benefit of the doubt and say that, you know, I have to wear glasses too now. And, you know, I don't like wearing them, but I don't like contacts, and so I'd rather choose glasses to wear. But I think that's much ado about nothing, personally.
Well, in other political news, the National Journal released some interesting news this past week, which we thought we would, that you would find very interesting, Governor. The National Republican Campaign Committee has launched a new series of deceptive websites designed to look like local news sources. As the National Journal reports, and I quote, the NRCC has created about 24 of these new faux news sites targeting Democrats, both challengers and incumbents, and is promoting them across the country with localized Google search ads. The NRCC's single-page sites are designed to appear to be a local news portal with logos like North County Update or Central Valley Update. The articles begin in the impartial voice of a political fact-checking site, hoping to lure in readers. At the very bottom in a box is the disclaimer that the NRCC paid for the site. This is a new and effective way to disseminate information to voters who are interested in learning the truth about these Democratic candidates, said Andrea Boza, communications director for the NRCC. What do you think? What do you make of this, Governor? If anything, it's an effective use of the internet, isn't it?
Sure, and it's just more Democratic and Republican mudslinging, deceptive campaigning, you know? I mean, why bring honesty into anything, you know? If you can deceive the people and win the election, isn't that really what it's all about? That's the way the Democrats and Republicans think. It isn't how you play the game. It's whether you win or lose. We're in the reality world here. So if you want to play the game and you want to get into politics, always remember, this is the crap you're going to deal with. Many people have asked me on multiple occasions why I only do one term. And I tell them truly, honestly, the reason I only do one term is because for 4 years you have to hang out with Democrats and Republicans. And after 4 years with them, you truly feel you need to take a bath or a shower.
Well, does this give you any incentive to want to run for office?
Oh, yes. I just love to jump into these phrases with their sets of rules and their deceit and their disgusting political that they've created here. It's always enjoyable to deal with the Democrats and Republicans. They're so upstanding, aren't they? Alex, I better say I'm being sarcastic there. People may not get it.
Well, Governor, it may or may not shock you to know that a new NBC Wall Street Journal poll reported that 76% of Americans do not feel confident that their children will have a better life than they do. This is the lowest number ever measured in the survey. And as the Washington Post points out, a stunning indication of the historic uncertainty and pessimism coursing through the public. So does this come as a surprise, Governor?
Not at all. I mean, when you look at the situation, how the Democrats and Republicans are destroying the middle class, you're seeing the middle class just disintegrate before our very eyes. You're seeing union busting happening for the working people. You're seeing them fight to give you minimum wage. Minimum wage. Like Jesse Ventura said, let's pass a law for maximum wage. No one is allowed to make over $100 million in 1 year. If you can't live on $100 million, then I say you deserve capital punishment for it. Because if you're unable to do that, then, you know, to me, you're worthless if you can't live on $100 million a year. But no, it doesn't surprise me to see the average families, because you're seeing the middle class disappear. You're seeing that widen on a daily basis between the rich and the poor. You're seeing the statistics, how the rich control all the money and they control all the media, and they're an oligarchy, as they call it. That's what we're living under today. And until we, the people, take it back and stop electing Democrats and Republicans, well, this is the road you're going to go down. I hope you enjoy it.
Well, the poll also reported that a majority of the people surveyed believe that the division between the poor and the rich is making it difficult to attain the American dream.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Because didn't we say the statistics, if they had raised the minimum wage merely by inflation, didn't we find out the minimum wage would be up around $20 an hour? Somewhere up in there. You know, and so absolutely, you know, and you've got people now, you got these people saying we should get rid of the minimum wage altogether. And that way, you know, they can hire whoever wants to work for whatever money. And that exactly turns us into a third world nation, because that's exactly what you turn into then. And that's the direction we're heading. And we have the Democrats and Republicans to thank for it. How many more times can I say that? But it is sinking in with the young people. because the young people are on the internet, the young people are listening to these podcasts, and the young people are absorbing it all. And obviously polls are showing they're buying in, because on a record number, young people are not becoming Democrats and Republicans. They're not drinking the Kool-Aid, and that's got to be scaring the shit out of them. Now we just need the young people to rise up and vote accordingly.
Well, Governor, we want to end this segment with a game, and hopefully your listeners will want to play along. NPR's Linton Weeks came up with a fun, though somewhat disheartening quiz. It's called the Bush-Obama Quiz. What's the difference? Are you ready to play, Governor?
Absolutely. I got to score high on this because there ain't no difference.
Well, we'll ask you a question, and you and your listeners must guess whether it was Bush or Obama. Are you ready?
Okay.
All right. Which president authorized military attacks on Iraqi targets?
Both.
Which president said we are a nation of immigrants, but our immigration system needs fixing?
Both.
Which president sparked protests by not closing the Guantanamo Bay detention facility?
Both.
Which president supported increased domestic oil and gas production?
Both.
Which president experienced lackluster popular support midsummer in the middle of his second term? His job approval rating was at 40%, while his disapproval rating was in the mid-50s.
Let me guess, both.
And which president endorsed increased surveillance of everyday Americans?
And the final answer is both. It's unanimous. There is no difference between George Bush and Barack Obama. I rest my case. You got it right there, Alex. When, you know, the only time there will be difference, if we elect a woman, as long as she's a Democrat or Republican, then the answer won't be both. It'll be all three. So if Hillary gets elected, we can change all the answers from both to triumphant. All three. That's all for this week's headlines. Remember to check in at Off the Grid on Aura TV, where I give you my take on what's happening around the country and the world. No censors, no BS. Here's a few highlights from last week's shows.
18-year-old Michael Brown was 2 days away from starting college on August 9th, but after an alleged altercation with police officer Darren Wilson, he was shot at least 6 times and left for dead in the middle of Ferguson, Missouri Street. By now, we've all seen the reports and startling images from the front lines, Governor. What were your first impressions?
I'm going to startle people and say, here's my impression of this whole thing, racism. It's still alive and well in America, and this is a clear example of it. Racism on both sides. Whites don't trust blacks. Blacks don't trust whites. And it's out there, and we've got to continue to battle it. We've got to continue to forge ahead, because that is the ultimate problem here, I believe, even more so than police brutality or anything like that. Yeah, that's out there. You look at police forces today, they look like the military. Do they need to be that way? Have we pushed them to that level, we as a society? Or is there something else underlying in all this? I know I'm going off on a rant here, Alex, but I felt I need to continue on.
Conflicting accounts from local law enforcement and eyewitnesses have made it difficult to get to the bottom of what exactly happened less than 2 weeks ago. And the lack of dashboard video cameras in Ferguson police cruisers may prevent us from ever knowing the full truth. According to Ferguson Police Chief Thomas Jackson, this spring the department purchased 2 dashboard cameras and 2 wearable body cameras, but the equipment hasn't been installed because the department doesn't have the money to cover the cost. So after seeing that same department meet peaceful protesters with tanks, armored personnel carriers, and military-grade rifles, can you believe it couldn't raise the $3,000 needed to install the dash cams?
Well, that is kind of humorous and sad, isn't it? That they've got all this equipment to wage war, but they have no equipment to have put a couple cameras up to see what's going on. The problem to me, though, comes down to this also. The use of lethal force. First of all, I oppose the death penalty to begin with, but you're putting the death penalty out there on the street with the use of lethal force against crimes that are in the courtroom could not rise to that level. You know, the only thing that rises to the level of the death penalty is murder. So unless you're out there committing murder, at what point do you use lethal force? That's the big question, I guess. That's the 800-pound gorilla in the room. For more Off the Grid, go to Aura.tv every Tuesday through Friday at 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. Now, Time for some Rowdy Roddy Piper. Today we welcome Roddy Piper, a.k.a. Rowdy Roddy Piper, as I know him. He's been a pro wrestler since the age of 15. Now, there ought to be some child labor laws on that. And was the youngest in the history of pro wrestling. He's now the host of his own podcast, and what a novel name, Piper's Pit. I wonder where that came from. Available on iTunes and Podcast One. He's even got his own soda line called, quote, All Out of Bubblegum, available at Rocket Fizz stores, and his own T-shirt line, Villain T-Shirts, available at his website, RowdyRoddyPiper.com. Welcome, Roddy, to my podcast. You're on with Jesse Ventura. Great to hear your voice again.
Jesse, Governor, sir, I am so honored. I am so honored to be on your podcast. I don't know for the rest of the folks if they know Governor Ventura like I do, but he's a man's man, Jesse Ventura, if anybody needs to know. I was there when Vince and Jesse were having it out over Jesse doing the VOs, and Jesse had one of like the greatest comebacks I've ever heard. As you know, they were going back and forth, and Jesse looks at Vince and says, Vince, you don't scare me. I've been under fire before. And then Jesse won the case. I just love it. I remember, too. Don't let me just keep rolling here, but I remember you and Adrian Adonis in Minneapolis. Then you guys were on top. Yeah, you guys were a tag team in Minneapolis. I don't know if you remember this.
Sure, the East-West connection.
Yeah. And you guys are. This is what Jesse and Adrian did to Rick Martel and myself. Jesse and Adrian, you know, they were a great tag team. We love Adrian to death. And they were in Minneapolis headlining the main event. I'm with Rick Martel, and I'm staying in a hotel called The Bomber. And we had to turn on the gas stove and open it to keep heat in. And Christmas time, from Jesse and Adrian saying how great they were having it. And, you know, eating the turkey and, you know, having a glass of wine. And there, Rick Martel and I are shivering in the corner. It's, you know, only God can give you those moments. It's wonderful to be on the show with you.
I want to tell the time that Roddy and I, let me do some back stuff here. When the WWF first went national and we went across the nation, we referred to us as the exploratory teams when we'd get sent to these places that they'd never been before. And I don't know, Roddy, I know you're going to remember this, but we were off. It was you and me, and I forget who else was with us, but we actually got to go eat real Kentucky Fried Chicken. Remember that?
Yes. Yeah,
remember that? Because we were actually in Kentucky, so we thought, well, if there's one place you can get real Kentucky Fried Chicken, it's in Kentucky. We pull into the Colonel Sanders place, we order all our chicken, we go out to the car and we're eating it, and we all looked at each other and said, hell, it don't taste no different than if we're in Iowa or New Jersey. You know, what the hell? I thought there'd be a difference. We're in Kentucky, and this is Kentucky Fried Chicken. Roddy, you remember that?
I do. I also remember Jesse had a great line, man. He says, you know, I love sharing rooms with Piper. He never comes home. I've got the room all to myself no matter how many times I share it. We had some fun. Whoa.
Well, it was different times. I mean, I tried to explain to people one time what it was like when Vince actually, you know, there were the 26 territories which you and I grew up in where, you know, you could work here for a while, and then when you ran out there, you could go to another one, and that's basically what wrestling was, and you all drove in cars. Well, Roddy and I, of course, were on the ground floor when Vince went national, when he took the WWF with the advent of cable television and all that stuff, and across the world we went. But believe me, there was a lot of times where it wasn't always the glory and the big crowds, like when we were eating that Kentucky Fried Chicken. I remember one I remember one time they sent us down into the Carolinas, and I forget where Strongbow was running the town, and we had them outnumbered. There was more wrestlers than there were fans. You know, we're in some damn arena at a state fair somewhere in North Carolina, and there ain't nobody there. And I'll never forget Strongbow comes up to me and wants me to get the juice.
Like we're going to build the town.
Yeah, we're going to build the town. And I looked at him, and I said, are you kidding me? I said, we got him outnumbered. I said, I'm going to go out there and give him 20 minutes and get the hell out of here. I'll never forget that.
We were on point, and we did a lot of Lewis and Clark expeditions where you never knew what was going to happen in the towns that we would go to. I don't think folks know how hard and even to a point how dangerous it was on a daily basis. You know, we'd get a booking sheet, and they'd be running three different towns every night. And it was just one sheet of paper. It looked like they just stamped on it, and we'd look for our names, and yep. They'd usually like tag them. Yeah.
Roddy, let me ask you this. Did you ever keep track of the most nights you worked in a row?
I did. 91.
Oh, you got me beat then. I made it to 63. That was my best, was 63 nights in a row. I knew guys beat me. I always tell everybody, I made it to 63, but there's guys that'll double and triple me for the amount of nights in a row. So you actually went 91 nights without a day off.
Without a day off, 91 different towns. After about 50 or 60, I didn't really even know what was going on anymore. It was kind of autopilot. I think that's where a lot of the danger came in. After 91, and they give me some days off, right? Three.
Yeah, 3 days off.
3 days off.
Wait, you got 3 days off and you had to use two of them just to get there and back.
Exactly. Are you kidding me? I would be like in the Hojo's in Pittsburgh, and it's like 9 o'clock in the morning, and they're banging them on our door, and they got Mean Gene just set up, I'll make it up, like room 311, and they caught the back job. All right, do the interviews. All right, I'm going to be in Madison Square Garden. All right, go back to bed. It was insanity. It was insanity. What a role.
But it was a lot of fun, though. We had our good times in those days. Roddy, I left in 1990. When did you actually leave the WWF after that initial big run we did?
Yeah, when I really left, I retired in 1987. That was my first retirement, and I went and did They Live, which really got McMahon hot. So much so.
I had to quit to do Predator.
Gotcha.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that.
Is that why? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people didn't know. I had to quit. Vince told me I couldn't do it, and I looked at him and said, are you kidding me? I said, I get a chance to co-star with Schwarzenegger. I can always come back to wrestling. I said, fine, I quit. And so I quit and went through that. That's why, and here's where he got caught. We were going into our second year of NBC Saturday Night Main Event, and NBC had bought it with me being the announcer, and I had quit. And I was off doing Predator, and he had to send Steve Taylor down there because NBC was giving him the extreme pressure. They said, we bought this show with Jesse Ventura on the mic. Where the hell is he? And so that's where I really had – I had Vince over the barrel then. That's when I brought the agent in.
You were probably one of the first to
agent. I was the first.
Yeah.
Hogan had an agent, but the agent didn't deal with wrestling. It dealt with only his movie stuff and all the other stuff. But I was actually the first person that made Vince McMahon deal with an agent. In fact, when I was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2004, Vince was sitting right there, and I told the whole crowd that was my proudest moment in wrestling, was the day that I made Vince McMahon deal with an agent.
There's another spot. There's another spot. So, you know, here you go along, right? And I just caught this. I was passing the TV, and I just caught this. Vince had decided to come to Minneapolis while you, the Right Honorable Governor Jesse Ventura, was, in charge. And so there's Vince, and Vince goes to shake your hand, and you put your hand back and go, sit down. I'm the boss here. You know, it's just great stuff, well, man.
You want to hear the best one that happened. I'm sitting in the here's the best one that happened while I was governor. Two things. First of all, I get a visit one day from Gene Okerlund and Ric Flair, right? While I'm governor, in the governor's office at the Capitol in Minnesota. And, you know, I was happy to see Rick and Gene, and, you know, I've got them up there. But here's what it was. You're going to love this, Roddy. Here's what it was about. Flair is contemplating now, since I won in Minnesota, he's thinking about running for governor of North Carolina. Right? which was fine and dandy. I had nothing. I says, hey, if you feel inclined, do it. But then I said to him, I told him, Rick, you need to know something. Politics is dirtier than wrestling.
So
anything in your closet, you better get it out now. Because I said, if they discover something in your closet, a skeleton, they're going to bury you with it. So the best thing you can do is get it above board before you run.
Flair,
there you go.
Flair looks at me and he goes, well, he said, I do have a problem. And I go, well, what is it, Rick? He said, well, I've gotten like 223 speeding tickets.
And I
looked at Ric Flair. I said, Rick, you can't run for governor. I said, for God's sake, they'll kill you over that. I said, 200 speeding ticket? I mean, I was choking. I said, Rick, you can't run. Well, fortunately, Rick took my advice and he didn't run, but I almost fell over in my chair when he said he had this astronomical number of speeding tickets all in the state of North Carolina where he plans on being their governor.
Yeah. I think after you actually did it, I think all of us wanted to be governor of our own states. How the hell did he do that? But, you know, you got to look at it for a sec. Go.
We still, Roddy, we kind of wonder how we actually did it because we still don't really know.
Because you're honest.
Well, it turned out. It turned out we figured out how I did it. I got the most votes.
Because you were on a panel. I saw you on a panel one time when you were running for governor. And, like, they were asking a question, and the other two gentlemen, whatever they might have said, you had the best answer. You said, you know what? I don't know, but I will look it up, and I will know.
Yeah.
Somebody told the truth.
Yep, exactly. And the people loved it because they'd break into cheering and screaming and applauding and all that stuff. But, it was. And then I remember all the trouble. Vince got me in because after I won governor, then he wanted me to be the special referee at SummerSlam. And so we had to work that out. Well, here's the part I loved, Roddy. My entire 4 years as governor, never once was the Capitol open on Sunday. Never once.
In my entire 4 years.
Now, me working for Vince, it was a Sunday evening. I'm not there anyway. And yet I got raked over the coals for that. I'm the only guy in America who could hold down two jobs and get yelled at for it.
You know, the media.
The media yells at me for holding down two jobs, and everybody else in the country gets, oh, what a wonderful guy, looking out for his family. He's willing to do two jobs. I try to do one on a Sunday night when you ain't doing shit anyway, you know, and I'm going to referee a match for Vince McMahon, and the match is right in Minneapolis. I don't even have to leave the state.
And these people, the media goes ballistic over it. Oh, how could he do that? That's crazy. You know, and I'm going, Jesus, what next? You know?
When you were, hey, Jesse, when you were running for governor, right?
Yeah.
As you started to get in the process, were you surprised, coming from the wrestling business, were you surprised at how they conducted themselves, the other people that were running? And then once you made it and you got to become governor and you walked in and found out, you know, what they tell you, whatever that is, how did that hit you? How did you feel about everything that was going on, that had gone on?
It was the Twilight Zone.
Oof.
I think is the best way I can describe it. Nobody gave me a chance to win, and yet 2 days before the election, they were calling it a three-way toss-up. And then I knew I had a great chance. I mean, I never went in to lose. I didn't go in to make a statement. I went in to win, and I felt I could. I had been mayor, the sixth largest city from 90 to 94, and this was 5 years later. I remember this, though, Roddy. I remember the first debate I was at, and it was Skip Humphrey, Hubert Humphrey's son, Norm Coleman, the senator who was mayor of St. Paul, myself. And they were so... Coleman was so slick. He actually psyched me out the first debate because he was so polished. And then all of a sudden it hit me. Well, it hit me. I sat there and thought, wait a minute. Don't be him. Be the opposite of him. Don't be polished. Be a regular person. And I realized that was the key to success. People were not looking for a polished politician. They were looking for somebody who would tell them the truth.
A real person. But,
yeah.
So once you got in there, was there friction because you're... I know you, man. I love you. You know, you're a stand-up guy. You don't take a back step. Was there friction for you? Because let me just equate it to when I went and did They Live, the wrestling industry, Vince, they got mad at me for leaving. And they actually sent a message to me. You tell Piper that Hogan and McMahon are the only true blue WWFers. And when I came into the movie world, their attitude to me was, oh, great, another jock going to make a movie. And so, I basically had the world hating me, which, hasn't changed much. But I went to acting class, and, I tried real, real hard to have respect for their craft so that, I would earn my position and be respected for that. So yourself as governor, when you came from, again, you put his time in as a mayor. So that's the same as me going to the acting class. You put in the time to find out how all this works. When you got up there and all these people, was it another jock wanting to be governor? Is that what they're thinking?
I don't think so. For me, at that point in time, it was more the shock of the third party because I wasn't a Democrat or Republican. I had run under then the Reform Party, the Independence Party of Minnesota, and we affiliated with Perot's Reform Party at that time. So it was more the shock of the third entity entering in. It would almost be like, I don't know how to describe it. It would be, you got the two major wrestling organizations, the WCW and the WWF, and I was almost like this person that got elected that didn't belong to either of them.
You were with Ring of Honor.
Yeah, I didn't belong to either of the power brokers. I was this third entity, and it really put you on an island, Roddy, because you had no friends. I mean, when I got over there as governor, there was nobody I could lean to and say, well, help me out on this, because I was the adversary to all of them. But being in the executive branch, I didn't mind it that bad. You'll love this. You know what my first proclamation was as governor? You know how you do those proclamations? The first one I did as governor, I declared it Rolling Stones Day in Minnesota.
How did you not love that governor?
Because the Rolling Stones were touring in 1999 in February, and I had just taken office a month earlier, and I had bodyguarded them. I thought, shit, I'm going to name it Rolling Stones Day in Minnesota. And I did it. And you're going
to
love this, Roddy. That night, I meet the Stones, right, and they were really honored. Mick Jagger said, no one's ever did this for us before and all this, but Keith Richards stole it. Keith Richards comes up to me that night, and I'll always remember it. Keith comes up to me, and he goes, So you used to bodyguard us back in 78 and 81, huh? And I said, yep. And he goes, and now you're the governor. And I went, yep. And in that great British Cockney accent, he looks at me and he goes, fucking great.
And I'll always remember that.
Keith Richards saying that to me.
Fucking great, mate.
Fucking great.
Now, you and I together may hold a world record for the closest to ever having a series on television and not getting it.
It
starts from the beginning. So Jesse already had a part, the lead in a series about an ex-wrestler who becomes a policeman and et cetera. And it was Disney and maybe NBC together. I'm not sure if it's NBC or who it was, but it was Disney. And so, you know, credit to you, Jesse, because I wanted to be in part of the project. It was a great project, and I believed in it. And Jesse said, hey, if you go, you know, and see them and do the audition, I got no problem with that, which was very cool for those fans out there that don't know. Normally a wrestler would say, no, I wouldn't tell you anything or sabotage you, stuff your bagpipes with toilet paper like Freddie Blassie did to me. But Jesse, not a problem. And then we had to go in, Jesse and myself, to this room where the executives were and kind of, you know, do an audition, for lack of a better word. And, you know, we got great chemistry. And when we get, not only a pilot, but they're going to pick it up. I can't remember if it was 13 episodes or six. But in any case, was it six or 13?
They picked us up for 13, and they even brought in the Magnum P.I. writing team. Remember that?
They had the writers from Magnum P.I.
That's right. So now they decided to have a house in Venice, in California, that they were going to shoot exteriors during the show. And so they said to me, hey, if you want to live in the house, we don't got no problem with that. That was very kind of them. So I moved into the house. And Jesse and I, we went to the office in Disney, and we got our call sheets. And, you know, I kind of got to make it up. I don't know, 6:45 next morning. And, all right, everything's wonderful, tickety-poo, here we go. We had shot the pilot. And I get back to the house. And I get a phone call from Jesse. You're not going to believe this. What? We've been put on hold. Pulled the plug, series. And I don't know why. I had heard that Disney, that's why I'm not sure of the second entity. I think it was NBC, but I'm not positive.
No, it was Disney and Coralco.
And I think they had a
They had a pending lawsuit where they were on opposite sides of a lawsuit, and they were the two people that were promoting, that were producing our show. We got caught in a lawsuit between two entities that had nothing to do with our show other than they were co-producing it, and then they're in legal battle over another thing, so they allowed the whole thing to go right down the toilet.
Oh, jeez. We had a call sheet.
Oh, yeah. And it would have been
away.
It would have been a great show. Let me give the premise for the people that don't remember Tag Team. It was a great premise. It was going to be like the A-Team. It was not going to be very serious. It was going to be a 7 o'clocker at night. The kids could watch. It was basically this. Two wrestlers get kicked out of wrestling, and they become cops. And it actually came from the idea from a six-year-old boy. A six-year-old boy, the writer who wrote the script, was sitting watching wrestling with his son, and he said, gee, Dad, wouldn't it be neat to see two wrestlers become cops? And that's how the whole thing started. That was the background on the whole thing. And I needed another wrestler. That's why I had no qualms about bringing Roddy in. Number one, Roddy did a great job in They Live acting, so I knew he could act. And number two, I needed someone in the ring with me that knew what the hell he was doing. And so it was a natural thing for us two to get together. And I'll tell you, Roddy, if they'd have flown with that, I believe our lives would have changed, because I, to this day, believe tag team would have been a huge hit.
Me too. Me too. I believe that we would have opened up a lot of doors for a lot of other people, but for ourselves and our families, because we had, there was no egos, none at all. We all went in with our hearts.
Well, the other thing too,
just like the pilot, you and I did all our own stunts, so they didn't even have to do hard cuts for stuntmen. Because when we jumped off of buildings, we did it ourselves.
That's right. They actually felt, and this is Hollywood, they felt so bad they got us a massage.
Yeah.
They never did anything.
Yeah, remember that? We did all our own stunts, so they gave us a massage at the end of the day. I remember that now. Oh, God.
It's got to be the closest to having a series and not getting it in the history of Hollywood. I don't know how much closer you can get.
Yeah, when they and I'd heard they had already spent $1 million. They had already spent $1 million on the set and everything else, and they just let it flush right down the toilet. And away, you know, and that was the end of that. And there went our pilot, and there went history, I guess. You know, Roddy, if you think about it, had tag team went, I probably would have never been governor.
You know, that's correct. If tag team had took off, your life and my life was taking different, completely different directions. In my case, for much for the better. And in your case, I don't know. You know, having the will and the intelligence and the ability to make yourself the governor of a state with the background of pro wrestling and, of course, the service that you did for our country. You know, nobody else has ever done it before. So I don't know that if it would have changed your life for the better, but it would have mine anyway, and I was hanging out.
Like I said, Roddy, both our lives would have changed drastically, because I highly doubt I would have ever gone into politics, because, you know, that show happened in the 90s, the early 90s, so I wouldn't have been mayor, and the chances of me ever going for governor, probably, if that pilot would have gone and we'd had a series, our lives would have been completely different.
Oh,
amazing.
Man.
Totally
amazing stuff. You know, folks are finding out right now, like, what goes on behind the scenes and how much we put into things and how quickly they take them.
Let me ask you this now. I got this report have come to me that Mark Wahlberg's going to portray you in a movie. Is that true?
No. Here's what's going on. They want to do, a movie on my life story. I've never talked about my life before pro wrestling at 15. It's just something even when I wrote my book, I started at 15. And, Jimmy Kimmel and Sal Kimmel, they're friends of mine. And Cousin Sal, they were starting to write up a script, the story of my life. And they started going, well, like, who would be playing him? Who would you think could play Roddy Piper? And then they started going, and boom, Mark Wahlberg's name came up, and they came to me and asked me, and, you know, I'm doing the math in my head. I'm going, you know, I'm not sure I want a movie in my life. it's been a bumpy road.
Roddy,
at least they're giving you a say so. After I won governor, NBC did that story on me. What horse shit. I mean, it wasn't even accurate. They wouldn't even bring me in to counsel on it.
Nothing like that.
They wouldn't?
Not a bit. Nothing. They wouldn't even bring me into it. And I thought, what a farce this is, you know, and they went ahead with it anyway. So at least in your case, they're bringing you in and they're allowing you to come in and, you know, make it somewhat accurate.
Yeah. Somewhat accurate, for sure. And so Mark Wahlberg's name came up, and, you know, that's what's been circulating. And that's, you know, so I want to make sure that everybody understands that I'm being honest with it. That Mark seemed to be the guy that everybody thought that could carry the ball on that particular one. Because you know what wasn't so easy.
Have you tested him out wearing a kilt yet?
No, I haven't, but I have a feeling he'd have no problem. He's got Wahlburgers on right now, so...
Roddy, you better check his legs out and make sure they're going to look good coming out of that kilt. If they look bad, it ain't going to work.
You know, it's not so easy walking in the stadium in Mexico with a kilt on, you know. Them damn bagpipes. We were in Portland, Oregon together for a while. And folks won't know this, so let me set it up. There was a promoter there, just a little guy named Don Owens. And he was a crabby, wonderful little guy. And I have my bagpipes. And I came fifth in the world with a band I played with called Cabre Fay in grade one competition when I was 14. I came fifth in the world playing the bagpipes. So I'd get in the ring, and I would ask the announcer, in this case it was Don Owens, to please be quiet while I played the Scottish National Anthem. And then what I would do is I would blow the bagpipes up, and I'd have the announcer put the microphone down by the chanter, and that's where your fingers move, so that you get the best volume. And then I would play them like Jack Benny. And I'd go like, oh, yeah. You know, and so this is my very first day in the territory, and it's live. So there I am in front, and people start going, whoa, give it. I'm in my mind, I'm going, thank you, baby Jesus. Thank you, baby. Yeah. All of a sudden, Don Owens pulls the microphone away and says, everybody, quiet down. Stop that now, he says to me. He stops now. He says, now listen, I can't play the bagpipes, and neither can you. Let's give him another chance. No, it's okay, Don. Just ring the bell. I'll take it from here.
Ring the bell. I'll play later.
He thought that I was just that bad on the bagpipes, and he was sticking up for me. You can't write that kind of stuff.
He couldn't figure out you did it on purpose.
I did it on purpose, Don. Jeez.
Hey, Roddy, that's like when I was out there. You remember Don's brother, Elton?
Oh, jeez, what a piece of work.
Oh, yeah. Well, Elton used to have the shooter trophy where for 1 minute somebody in the territory would beat a shooter champion, right? Well, we outfoxed him on that. We were working the shoots.
Why go out there and shoot? So we'd work the shoots, and Elton would think we were really going out there trying to get takedowns, and it was all a big scam, and then he'd pay us all $25 more at the end of the night.
That's God's truth. He had a toupee on his head, looked like a little roadkill, and he was drinking that vodka in Eugene.
Oh, yeah.
What was it?
Eugene and Roseburg.
There was not a toilet for us. There was not a shower. The hot dog, Elton would say, the hot dog water. They're all out of hot dogs. Use the hot dog water. Yeah, we love you. We love you too, Elton. You know, what a piece of work. You did great in Minneapolis.
What's that?
You did great in Minneapolis with Adrian. I missed you.
Oh, yeah, I miss Adrian, too. You know, it was a shame he got killed in that car wreck up in Newfoundland or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
What year was that, Roddy? What year did Adrian die?
It
was about 93, 94, something like that?
Yeah, I did the eulogy at his last funeral I went to, did the eulogy. Okay. 93, I think. And,
yeah, I think so.
You know,
because I was long gone. I left the business I left Vince in 1990 when we had a big fallout over. You know what my final demise was with Vince?
No.
I had a company come up to me independently and want to do a video game with me, and Vince wouldn't let me. And I said, Vince, you don't own me. I can license my name to anybody I want to. I said, I've owned the copyright of my name since the mid 1980s. You don't own it. And he told me, he said, if you do this, you can't work for me anymore. I said, fine, I guess I'm done then. And then, of course, when I left him, I brought the federal lawsuit against him and beat him in federal court for all. Do you know, Roddy, I call that my wrestling retirement. I still get quarterly checks for the 90 videotapes that I was on from beating him in federal court. I think I'm the only wrestler in the world that has a retirement from Vince.
Now, so you know the fallout there. With, like, from fans out there, Jesse has a point of view that nobody else does when he's calling color on a match. There's only one Jesse, and it's great. It's great. And it was so good that when this happened with Jesse and Vince, Vince starts to call me and said, I want you to come in the booth. And, no, I want to come in the booth. And Vince was scared to death of losing the audience because Jesse was the guy that they were listening to and his take on it. And so then Vince drugged me into the booth, drugged Savage into the booth, drugged Mr. Perfect into the booth, trying to keep an audience that Jesse had held. And when Jesse went, they were deathly afraid that audience would go. And some of it did. I got stuck in the booth.
Roddy, some of it might have, but as you know and I know, wrestling's bigger than all of us, you know. We all took a part in it. We all were a brick in the building, but you know, the business itself, that nobody is too big for the business, and that's one thing you learn about it.
Yeah, that's for sure. I tried to fight the establishment so many times, and all I've done is hurt myself. I wish that I hadn't been so, as we were raised by the old-timers, that you got room in your navel for two peas in the heart of a promoter. And, yep. You know, I got that mindset so hard that I began to be difficult to do business with. And, yep. You know, that's my fault. However, you know what, Jesse, at the same time, I was just a kid playing his bagpipes on the street, living at a YMCA. And I got a chance to, somebody just didn't show up from Vern.
Hey, Roddy, look at it this way, Roddy. You became one of the biggest stars in the history of wrestling. You headlined WrestleMania 1. Nobody can ever take that from you, man. They can't take that from
you.
And I was lucky enough to sit with Gorilla and broadcast it and had a great time doing it. Anyway, Roddy,
we're going to do some fun now, as I do on all of my podcasts. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, Roddy.
This is the time we play If I Were President. So here we go. Roddy Piper now. If you, Roddy Piper, were president, just pretend that you, Roddy Piper, have been elected president of the United States or Canada or whichever you prefer. Now give me quick answers on these. And, of course, don't take them too seriously because that's the fun of it, okay? Roddy Piper, you're the new president of the United States. Question number one. What's the first thing you'd do in the Oval Office if you're the president?
I would fire all the cabinet.
Fire the cabinet? They'd be gone anyway. You got to bring your own in, Roddy. So you'd fire them before you hired them. There we go. All right.
I got nobody messing with me. What I say goes.
All right. Question number two. Who's the first person you'd hire?
My son, because I can trust him.
There you go. Good answer. Number three, who's the first person you'd want to meet, being the president of the United States? Who would the first person you'd like to meet?
Ooh, Nelson Mandela.
But he's gone now.
Okay. But I'm president. I can do anything.
That would be quite a feat. Not even the president can bring you back from the dead. Although the president can kill you, he can make you dead, but he can't bring you back.
Anyway.
He can't bring you back. Okay.
Other than Nelson Mandela, who's the first person you'd want to meet, Roddy? You're the president.
The president of Iran.
Interesting. The president of Iran. Very interesting. Question four. If you could choose one song as your inaugural song, what would it be?
Look what they've done to my song, Mom.
Okay. And finally, question five.
Yes.
Would Hulk Hogan fit into your cabinet?
No. No. There's not enough room.
All right. There we go. Now, on our final segment, we got social media questions from the fans, Roddy. We have some Facebook questions for you, Roddy. Here we go.
Sure.
From Greg Fernandez Jr. asks, any chance for a They Live sequel?
You know, they talked about a They Live sequel. One of the things that my opinion is leave it as it is. And I don't think that it's a movie. I think it's a documentary. And I don't think they should do it too, because it ruins the first one. And okay. It's becoming true.
Okay, that's the next question from Nicholas Michael wants to know, are we headed for a real life They Live?
Like, you know, Jesse, like, I'm into this, shooting with this. There's no doubt in my mind that They Live is kind of like a template. There's a guy named David Icke who is, you know.
I know him. I had a knockdown, drag-out fight with him on Conspiracy Theory.
Okay, he uses They Live as a kind of like a template. And, you know, there's no doubt to me that there's alien life. That's what's going to get the world together. We're going to find out about these aliens, and we're all going to get together and say, hey, what are we going to do now? So
I mean, wait, Roddy. You mean when you lay outside on a star-filled night and you look up into the heavens of all those multitudes of stars up there, you really don't believe we're the only ones?
No, brother. You know, and like, for sure, just to have respect, I believe there's a higher power than me, for sure. But
okay.
There's no doubt in my mind the program.
All right.
Know, here we go. Quentin Detches asks, are you two going to do a sequel to Tag Team? I don't think they settled the lawsuit, so I think we're still in trouble. I never heard. Are they still suing each other, Roddy?
Yeah, they probably are. It takes a while.
Takes a while for them lawyers. So I don't think there'll be a sequel. There wasn't even a first to Tag Team, so how can there be a sequel?
We'd have to go back and do the first there, champ.
There you go. Nick Thielen wants to know, Hulk Hogan said that Piper was one of his most favorite feuds opponents. What's your reaction to that, Roddy?
Is that a compliment?
Well, I give him the respect for saying that, for dragging his ass around every Saturday morning for their entertainment. I give him respect for saying that. You betcha. Thank you, Hulk.
Okay.
Steve Wendell asks, who would you like to wrestle, past or present? Anybody Roddy Piper'd enjoy wrestling, past, present, anytime?
Gorgeous George.
Good answer.
I would have loved to wrestle Gorgeous George.
Yeah, I think a great answer. I think that's a great answer. You know, it's funny because that's the name, Roddy, that actually passed through my mind when I read that to you. Good answer.
Cool.
Anyway, Donald Packwood Jr. wants to know, what really happened with the snooker fiasco on Piper's Pit?
Oh, the way it came down was real simple. Jimmy Snooker says three words, you know, brother. And I got 2 minutes and 54 seconds in this Piper's Pit. I just said to someone, go get me some stuff from Fiji. And they came back with pineapples, bananas, and coconuts. And when I walked out there, I still really didn't understand what was going on. And I started dropping them coconuts and the bananas. And, you know, Jay Strongbow was the one who said, why don't you hit him with a coconut? You know, and I never really held a coconut before. I was born in Saskatoon. They don't have no coconuts there.
No coconuts up in Saskatoon?
It's 100 below, baby.
Yeah. Hey, Roddy, Saskatoon's the only place where you wear a fur to the beach.
No kidding, brother. And, you know, they're behind the camera, they're running out of time and go for it. And I hit him as hard as I could with that damn coconut. And Jimmy went back and took that backdrop down. And the worst part of it was when the backdrop went down behind it, it exposed the fact that we were in a warehouse and, like, there was two meat packers pulling a dolly, pulling on a pal mail. What's the guy in the skirt doing to the other guy? You know, completely killed the illusion. But it's something that it put me on the map, and I love Jimmy Snuka to death. You know,
In fact, when I went into the Hall of Fame, I made the statement: the two guys that I liked wrestling the most was Jimmy Snuka and Tito Santana. Those were the two guys I had the best chemistry with, were those two guys. That was for me personally. Anyway, Matthew Diven asks, what do you think of Brock Lesnar, who just defeated John Cena for the World Heavyweight Championship?
Personally, I love Brock. You know, he does everything. He plays football. You know, he comes to the WWE. He goes into the UFC. And, you know, he's a silverback gorilla, and he doesn't like people, you know, and we don't really like people around us. I get along great with him, and I think he's a credit to the business.
Very good. Finally, last question. Paul McDermott wrote in with, I would ask him what his biggest regret about being a pro wrestler, followed by what his favorite moment in pro wrestling. Roddy, what's your biggest regret in pro wrestling?
I guess, and I've said it, my biggest regret is I got hard to deal with. If I can give it a little bit of a longer answer. I left home when I was 13, and 15, I was in the ring, and I had some trust issues. So I guess my biggest regret is I didn't go to school and then become a pro wrestler. Maybe I can say it that way. I would have learned more.
What's your favorite moment in pro wrestling? What was your favorite moment, Roddy? Let me guess. I would have to say headlining WrestleMania 1.
Yeah, that's pretty, that one. There's two that are equal. You know, Jesse, like when we came to the ring, I never looked at the people. I looked at my opponent, you know, and did my job or whatever. In WrestleMania 3, so that big cart comes back that's going to take us to the ring. And it's my turn, and I'm behind the curtain, and Vince is there, and the cart comes back. And something went wrong with it. They're trying to fix it. But, you know, I'm in the blocks. I'm ready to go. And Vince is trying, boom, I just started running down. I got in that ring. 93,000 people stood. And it's the first time I really looked around at them. And it was a moment, holy cow, man. It was a moment only God can give you.
Yep.
That moment right there, that and WrestleMania 1, I'm very grateful.
I would agree with you, Roddy. I remember at WrestleMania 3, and I talk about this often, I saw that day what I still consider the greatest match that I ever viewed in my life, and that was when Ricky Steamboat wrestled Macho Man that night.
Wow, on fire.
That was the greatest match that I ever, I had the good fortune of broadcasting it, but to me, that and believe me, I saw a lot of great matches, but that one really stood out to me as being the greatest match I'd ever seen.
Yeah, and I've heard that before from other people time and again. They were just on fire.
In fact, Roddy, let me give you this one. When I went to court with Vince, right, federal court, they were trying to downplay the importance of the announcer, saying that announcers didn't mean nothing, they didn't have no value. You know what we did in front of the jury that blew them out of the water? We showed them Ricky Steamboat against Macho Man at WrestleMania 3. We showed it to them silent, the jury, and then we showed it to them with me and Monsoon broadcasting it.
That's brilliant.
And
holy cow.
You know, the jury went,
the jury went, wait a minute. You know, they, believe it or not, they were actually nodding off when there wasn't the broadcast with it.
Yes. You know, that's one of your most important position and men, that guy that's calling color. Not the play-by-play, the guy that's calling color. That's, you know, that's what's beaming out. That's what they're hearing. Trying to downplay it.
In wrestling, it's all of us working together as a team. You're not going to have success unless the guys in the ring are doing it, the lighting guys are doing it, the cameramen are doing it, and the announcers are doing it. We all have to be successful for it to be good. And fortunately, Unfortunately, we all were. Anyway, Roddy, I want to tell you thank you. It's been a great pleasure to talk with you today. We should talk more often. We don't talk with each other enough. And for my show today, I want to thank Roddy Piper for joining me for this fourth edition of We the People. It's been a thorough joy talking about the old wrestling days, and nobody better to do it with than you, Roddy. Good luck to you, my friend.
I love you with all my heart, and my best to your family. Thanks for having me. We'll see you down the road, Jess.
All right, Roddy, take care. There's Rowdy Roddy Piper, a legend of the World Wrestling Federation, my guest on the podcast today with Jesse Ventura. That's it for today. And again, I thank Roddy Piper for joining me. And as always, to all my listeners out there, please stay vigilant. It's your job to do so. Washington, Jefferson, and Adams told you you better be vigilant.
This is Corolla Digital.